Here to kick off season two, we have Robert Bager from openbadges.org. It's part of the IMS Global Learning Consortium, and I'll really let this episode speak for itself. This is an episode we recorded back in season one, but did not get it published, so we're deep diving into the archives. I'm just going to keep it raw. There's no intro really to this with the fancy music or anything. We're just going to get started, and here we go.
Hi, welcome Robert Bager to the Peg Doesn't Fit. How are you doing this afternoon, Robert?
I'm doing very well. It's 69 degrees, clear skies in Brooklyn, New York, so I'm feeling good.
Well, it's good to have you.
We don't have that quite a luxury. We got a temperature dip. I think we're at recess today. What, it was about 37 today, Ryan?
It was a little bit chilly and windy, but it was about like it was in Brooklyn yesterday.
Woo.
It's amazing how that weather travels throughout the country. Well, we are super excited to have you on the show. Our listeners know that we've been talking about badging kind of in bits and pieces throughout our episode. So I am excited to hear everything that you've got going on with badging and in the educational world. Real quick, was that a notification on your end?
No, not me.
I swear to God, I shut all my notifications off. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's all good. This is where he spends his time cutting out audio.
I know. Yeah. I've been there.
Start over. I don't know. Where are my notifications? I swear to God, I've shut these off.
I barely heard that. I think you should just not even bother. It's fine.
Okay.
I think it was pretty subtle. Yeah. I put my computer in Do Not Disturb. So that's like a fun Mac thing.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, I forgot what all we've said. So let's, I think I've welcomed you. Maybe I have to cut out the weather part. Let's get started with the important stuff. Okay. Because I need to know who sponsored you as a skateboarder and what was the coolest experience you had growing up as a skateboarder.
Yeah, so I got started when I was about 11 years old. I transferred high schools and I found myself with a lot of time on my own. So I spent a majority of that time out in New Brunswick, learning how to skate and meeting with a bunch of kids who, some of which were sponsored as well. So I was sponsored by a skate shop in Jersey that doesn't exist anymore, but also I was sponsored by Qualcomm, which is kind of interesting because they're a cell phone company, or at the time they had cell phones. So as a stipulation of my endorsement, I got free skateboard decks and stickers and all stuff, but they gave me a cell phone, which was very cool at the time. This is like, what, 2000, 2001? Yeah. So I was like a kid with a skateboard and a cell phone.
And unlimited minutes, probably.
Yeah, unlimited minutes. And I think the coolest experience, just to follow up with that question, was I was invited to the X Games Philadelphia in 2002 to skate the street course. So I was, let's see, I was probably about 14 years old, something like that. So I got to take the train in Philly. They had a street course set up, and I got to meet some of my my idols from Birdhouse and some local skaters. So it was very cool.
Did you meet awesome. Tony Hawk?
No, I have not met Tony Hawk. I wish I did, though. He seems like a very very cool, very reasonable guy.
Well, he certainly got a cool video game.
Yeah, that's part of that. You know what? We're going to talk a lot about learning and like how we encounter the different learning experiences that sort of on our pathway to lifelong learning generally. But yeah, the video game really inspired me. It had a great soundtrack. I started, you know, watching skate videos. There were skate videos in the game. Mm-hmm. It was like a cultural initiation, in so much as not only was it a game, but it was like sharing this skate culture that, you know, pre-internet, pre-Facebook, like it was a really clear on-road to that information. It got me excited.
It was a pretty immersive experience because I had friends who were skaters, but I wasn't, but I also wanted to live that life. And I just was doing other stuff, but by playing Tony Hawk, I felt like I was part of that culture. And you're right. It did a good job of wrapping that all together.
Were they riding skateboards on gravel roads back where you lived, Ryan?
Yeah. Pulled by goats.
See, I had the opposite. I was born right outside of New York City. So I got to go into lower Manhattan and parts of Jersey, Philadelphia. There was like a really good skate scene that like was organic in that area. So it was really easy for me to get involved. Yeah.
Yeah, I think my hometown, they had to make do with whatever they had. The town I live in now, equally small, we actually do have a skate park for the kids. So I think that was cool to see a small town embrace that.
Yeah, the last little anecdote, because you're literally the only people who have ever asked me about this in my professional career.
It's on your LinkedIn.
I have a bunch of fun facts. I have, and I'm glad that you guys picked up on that. Just from like a school perspective, though, when I transferred high schools a second time when I was in school, I was involved in policy work, like local politics, when I was like 15 years old, 16 years old. And I found out that the township, Rahway, New Jersey, where I grew up, they got a discretionary budget of $250,000 for recreational spending. So I petitioned the city council to use that money for a skate park. So sweet. Yeah, it was in the paper and the council member wanted to interview me. It's one of those things, and we'll talk more about this, but there's this like circuitous route to finding your personal and professional identity through the lens of education. And there are so many experiences that contribute to who we become as professional people that are measured, recognized, and a lot of them are not, especially in like the pre-internet age that, you know, a lot of us millennials find us in, where we probably grew up without the internet and then suddenly everything changed. So we'll talk a little bit about that, but I wanted to mention that, you know, getting involved in politics is something that young people can do if they feel passionate enough, and it can give them some really valuable experience that they can use throughout their life.
Good. So I want you to tell us about your path. You talked about circuitous route, leaving the classroom, branching out into the world of digital credentialing. If we look at your resume, you being a scientist, a teacher, a technical project manager, digital credentialing evangelist, your current title. I know that Eric and I thought that, you know, moving from scientist to teacher kind of is a little Walter White-esque. So we assume that meth cooker was not part of your resume, but what led you on this whole path to where you are now?
Well, if you don't think I got a question about the science of cooking illicit drugs as a biology, physiology, environmental science teacher, then that would be wishful thinking. I got a bunch of questions, especially because my background before I became a teacher was in academic, commercial, and industrial science. I worked on some bioremediation projects, microbiology, and something that I'm really passionate about is volunteering. So while I was a teacher, I would regularly volunteer at the Liberty Science Center in Jersey City, New Jersey, right across from the Statue of Liberty. And it taught me that I am as passionate about getting folks excited about science as I am about doing science. So that's what inspired the transition to education. And while I was a teacher, I noticed that there were just, there were gaps in the way that educators were recognized for their ongoing professional learning. They're very qualified individuals, like in terms of like workforce. A lot of teachers have to get a master's degree. They have to get recertified every year. And I noticed that most of what teachers were learning, most of what I was learning, was basically invisible. And I kind of noticed this Open Badges project that was started by the Mozilla Foundation. And I thought, a teacher needs to be in this room. So I became one of the first teachers in that room. And it inspired me to apply for a technical project management job for a nonprofit called Digital Promise. They still exist. They're doing really great work. I got started really early. There were only about a dozen people. By the time I left Digital Promise, 5 years or so later, the micro-credentialing space had completely blown up. And educators like me really influenced the direction of that standard and the stories that were being told. And now I find myself working at Concentric Sky on Badger and basically taking that same model and introducing it to folks in other sectors of the economy. So not just education, but like workforce development and sure. gamification of coursework and skills alignment and all kinds of stuff. So that's a little bit about my journey. It's, I guess, non-traditional, but it definitely gave me the tools I needed to be successful in the role I have now and along the way.
Well, I think it's great that we have somebody in our corner in this industry that can speak for the needs of how this can apply into the education. Because just listening to you talk, I mean, you know, you were talking in terms of teachers having gaps, and obviously, I mean, how great would it be? And I know some districts probably have this, but you have a dashboard that you could go on and look and see, okay, who still needs this training? Who's had this training? Who's expert here and there, or whatever. It would just be a one-stop shop. But we also want to talk about how it could be a benefit to students in terms of being more informative information rather than the traditional letter grade system. So I know you talked about it a little bit, but maybe you want to go into it a little bit more, maybe give our listeners a brief summary of what digital credentialing is and specifically how it can apply to the world of education.
Yeah, I love that question. So in a nutshell, a digital badge is a lot more than a digital sticker. So I like to think about this in terms of dimensionality. So a sticker is a two-dimensional thing. You can stick it onto, you know, a car or a wall or, you know, other things that I'm sure would leave adults particularly remiss. But especially me being in New York, I see them everywhere on everything, especially public buildings and things like that. But a digital sticker is a two-dimensional object. So it doesn't have any depth. It's a picture and there's nothing else to it. So the digital badges that Badger awards, and these are open badges, that's what they're called. And open badges add an additional dimension to those two-dimensional images in the sense that each of those images not only has a pretty picture, but when you start to share it online or you load it into your digital badges backpack, there's information about that badge, about the badge issuer, and about what you had to do to earn that badge. And that's really what makes the difference. And we call that metadata. It's basically the data about the badge. And I mean, it can be applied pretty broadly, but I like to frame this as, you know, learning happens all the time. It doesn't necessarily take any particular amount of time. There's a variety of contexts that learning happens, but digital badges make it really easy to recognize all those different kinds of learning, even though it might take someone a little bit longer, or maybe they do that in a non-traditional setting. This applies to professionals, educators. This also applies to learners. So curricular, co-curricular, and non-curricular skills can be recognized using something like a digital badge, and it adds that extra layer of depth to the learning experience, to the skill or competency that's being recognized.
Oh, I've been dreaming of this. Well, I've been dreaming of being you since before I knew who you were. And so this is pretty awesome.
Let's get involved, Ryan. Let's stick with this. There's no stopping.
Hey, before Ryan steps into his question. So when you're talking about three-dimensional, I keep seeing on my, you know, my Apple Watch, I got an Apple Watch, and I can go through my awards of my daily, but I mean, I can spin them, you know? So that's
they're so pretty.
Going is that you can spin them and you can play with these badges. But then when you start talking about how, well, not only that, but there's information that tells you exactly what that badge means, where you got that badge, my mind started running, which is, I'm assuming, why Ryan became a little speechless there, because this stuff is fascinating to us. And we've got a lot of ideas on how this can be used. And we're really looking forward to getting deeper in our interview and talking about some of those ideas.
And I'm also thinking maybe we'll have to have a part two someday, because I have immerse myself so deep in this that I want to make sure that my questions aren't too like high level for our people that are probably the audience of this one that are hearing this for the first time and just knowing, trying to learn what the heck this stuff even is. So that was kind of why I was pausing too, because I had all these bajillion questions I had related to blockchain and other things that I wanted to get into, but I know that's probably a little beyond where we want to go for this. So let's just talk about schools. Are you working with schools now? How many? I mean, I don't know if the quantity matters, but just kind of what detail what that looks like when you're working with schools and badging.
Yeah, absolutely. So Badger has over 20,000 issuers of digital badges around the world. And this is represented in over 160 countries. It involves millions of learners. So these are all the way through from grade level through to professional workers. So some things I wanted to point out here is that some of these ecosystems that are created using digital badges are low stakes. This is how I generally think about it. So if there's a gamified element, or if there's sort of a motivational element, and that's all you want to do with a digital badge, that's great. I call that low stakes. But when we start talking about high stakes digital badge programs, we're talking about districts like Wales, Wisconsin, that offer permanent pay increases for earning digital badges from, for example, Digital Promises ecosystem of specifically K-12 educator digital badges. While I was at Digital Promise, we also spearheaded a lot of the work around CEU equivalency. So making it really easy for educators in a variety of states to say, hey, I earned this digital badge. I'd like to have this recognized for CEU equivalency for my recertification. So like that's happening as well. In terms of the role that Badger's playing, like I said, it spans multiple segments of the economy. So we're working with K-12 districts, like the Georgia DOE is a good example, or Greenlight in Texas is another good example of districts that are using it at the K-12 level. But a lot of folks in higher ed are also using it. So a good example there would be the University of North Texas. They're using digital badges to recognize curricular and co-curricular skills within a learner record. So I don't want to go too nuts with some of the jargon here, but essentially think about it like a dynamic transcript that you can see as a learner and as an educator that gives you a really clear picture of where you are in your learning journey and what steps you need to take to get where you're going specifically, not necessarily other folks in your cohort or not necessarily folks who have the same major as you do, but really making those opportunities discoverable, actionable, and then helping you understand where you are along the way. So those are just some examples. There's also some really great corporate examples. Badger has, for example, we have a success story on our website on badger.com, but we worked with Walmart and Salesforce. So as you know, not everybody goes to college. A lot of folks go right into the workforce, and that shouldn't disqualify them from the same socioeconomic mobility that folks who choose, you know, the university route tend to enjoy. And that's kind of the well-worn path. So there's a lot of upskilling and reskilling initiatives by these employers to recognize and align those learning experiences, sometimes to community college credits as well. It can be a powerful on-road to getting folks back into college and taking a 2 or a 4-year degree that could change fundamentally the direction of their career. And in a lot of ways, these start with digital badges, you know, which I've outlined in the last question.
Mm-hmm. Are any of these examples using digital badges in lieu of traditional letter grades?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that's, so it depends on who you ask in the open badges space. I think that there are definitely some folks who are looking to usurp the existing proxy of measuring professional development or learning. So letter grades or Carnegie units or like well-established ways of measuring progress. I classify these things as proxies because they're not necessarily the learning. It's a measure of the learning. So there are some folks who are replacing that model. I'm actually of the mind that digital badges should augment what are currently happening because a lot of times things like transcripts are very valuable tools, but they're valuable for a office or a registrar office. You know, they're valuable tools for aligning student learning outcomes for getting accredited as a university. It's not really learner-centric. So when I think about the role of digital badges, I tend to think about it in terms of augmenting the existing system. And in some ways, it could replace things like letter grades. But that's, you know, baby steps. You know, we don't want to throw too much on a teacher's plate all at once. Sure. You could.
Right. And that's where my next question would lead is that, you know, because that's ultimately my vision, because I get it that the letter grades maybe are good on a piece of paper and they're good in a secretary's office and they're supposed to be this, but you know, a lot of companies will look at that and they'll be like, oh, this person's got a 3.875. I mean, that's a no-brainer. Not knowing what kind of teacher they had. I mean, did they get an A in class because they turned in all their work on time? I mean, was it accurate? Did they do You know, did they bring a bunch of dry erase markers and Kleenex for extra credit to get that A? So I like the idea of the augmentation, you know, having it kind of work coexist, say, hey, okay, if you're going to get this letter grade, you have to show mastery and this many skills, because at least it really means something. But, you know, so I know you don't want to skip ahead, but taking my vision into account, because I see a world where, you know, the whole educational system is moving towards standards, right? The standards are driving our instruction. And I don't know, Ryan, how many standards do you have to hit in seventh grade?
50.
50 standards. I mean, that's a lot of standards. So there needs to be some work done before that in terms of minimizing and prioritizing which specific standards. But what if we lived in a world where you could receive badges, maybe layered badges, like a silver, a bronze, a gold per standard? So then that transcript, now you don't just see seventh grade language arts, A, B, C, D, or F, but you see seventh grade language arts that they have proficiency level on this many standards. So like you were saying before, it gives the learner and the educator a clear idea of what that learner still needs. Because if Ryan has a student that maybe gets an A in his class, I think it would be unfair to assume that that student has mastered all 50 of those standards. Right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm almost allergic to the word mastery. I think that it's a great word, but what does it mean in practice is so variable. And this could not be better materialized in a classroom than through differentiation. It's really something that educators, not only is a best practice, but I think it really helps them self-actualize their own skill as an instructor. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to mention that, you know, Eric, you mentioned bronze, silver, gold, this kind of scaffolding. Mm-hmm. You're basically talking about pathways, which is also sort of the next level beyond digital badges. So like, how are those digital badges oriented along learning pathways? It could look very different for one classroom versus another. And any teacher could tell you that the learning environment is so variable across the country. I mean, even within a school, two classrooms can be very different. It depends on the teacher. And, you know, it reminds me of one of my favorite books that have come out in the past few years, which is The End of Average by Todd Rose. And in his book, he identifies jagged learning profiles, and he elaborates on the value of differentiation based on mindset, based on a more holistic view of the student's needs, which I think is more accurate. So it brings us back to that question of proxies. So like, how are we measuring success? You know, I'll be honest, you know, when I was in college, my GPA was like 3.25.
No way. So you're like a genius.
Well, here's the thing. This genius had two jobs, full-time jobs in college. And I was also working at a laboratory, and I was volunteering, and I was paying my whole way through. So you hit the nail on the head, Eric, as far as I'm concerned. Grades are an okay proxy. Maybe 50 years ago, they were a good proxy when there were, you know, distractions everywhere. But I think that it's so much more clear that the resolution around learning could be so much better. And digital badges are just one of those tools. I mentioned pathways. It's another tool that you can use to complement, accentuate, and evolve your learning practice over time, which is what we're seeing, you know, over the course of a teacher's career. And sometimes, you know, from class year to class year, you know, the needs change. So adopting those tools can be a really valuable way of meeting those needs of your learners, but also, you know, complementing your own professional practice, which is likely evolving.
Yeah. So my question would be then, and I don't know if, for instance, any of those schools you're working with have truly done away from grades, or they're just using the badges as an augmentation. I keep saying augmentation, but whatever, working parallel with them. Are any of them working with just badges and do away with grades? Because what I'm curious about, what I'm getting at, is how that works with a student then going to college that uses a traditional transcript system, a letter grade system, to determine admittance into their school.
Yeah, and you know what? This is where we start to get into the stuff that is a little, I don't know, it's outside my realm of expertise, but you know, because we live in the United States and we have this beautiful like federalist system where every state kind of gets leeway to decide what learning looks like. You know, there's definitely insight and there's definitely some, there's like incentives created by the federal Department of Education, but every state is totally different. And in some cases, communities and districts are totally different. So from an educator perspective, there are different requirements for CEU equivalency and professional learning and recertification. The same goes for the learners themselves. So for example, Greenlight in Texas, they are shifting away from grades and they're moving towards 21st century skills, marketable skills, something like that. But it's tough for districts because there is this, and I noticed this when we were looking to get state equivalency for the Digital Promise ecosystem I helped work on, we still had to find the CEU equivalency. So it's almost like we have to embrace the proxy that we're trying to eliminate by aligning those digital credentials to the proxy itself. And it's because there are a lot of folks in the room. So there's like universities in the room, you know, what do they recognize? There's high schools in the room. How do they, with efficacy, measure student learning outcomes using something like a badge? And there are tools to do this. And there are districts that are doing this. There's a really great program that SNHU, S-N-H-U, Southern New Hampshire University, is running. And they've created some really cool ways to get folks recognized for things that they do in high school and serve as like additional qualifying events for their transition to college. And the same goes for workforce. So I actually think the workforce is doing a lot of innovative stuff. You know, you've seen companies like Google come out and say, hey, if you don't have a college degree, it's all good. And they literally just launched a series of courses that I think they're using Coursera. But, you know, this shift to recognizing learning, regardless of whether or not it aligns with any particular standard, is moving towards a competency basis. So having evidence that you can point to is almost more valuable under certain circumstances. I mean, I know in the technical world, that's the case. You know, a college degree is great, but like, show me what you can do. So a lot of these digital badges, you can attach evidence to it. So your backpack becomes a living portfolio of all of those things that you've actually done and that you can show someone versus meeting the objectives or that a district might, you know, come up with or something like that.
And just to be clear, the open badge system allows the recipient to own that badge, correct? Versus if you got a badge in Google, it's kind of Google's badge. So you got to log into Google to get it. But if you have an open badge and you have that backpack that you're speaking of, it doesn't matter what platform you earn it in. It's yours and you can put it in your backpack. Am I off base?
Yeah, no, you nailed it, Eric. And this is actually something that I feel really strongly about. I don't get too many opportunities because I don't want to throw shade at like all the competitor digital badges because it's a big space. It's a $2.2 trillion space, micro-credentials and alternative credentialing. To be clear, when I got started with this like 7 years ago, this was a white paper. There were a bunch of communities that were working on this out of the kindness of their heart. There was no money for it. So now, fast forward, there's a lot of money in it. And the one thing I want to leave folks who listen to this podcast with is be careful. There are open ecosystems and there are closed gardens. And I'm not saying that those closed gardens aren't necessarily valuable places, but what I'm saying is, Eric, exactly what you said. What happens when you leave that garden?
Right.
So Badger is dedicated to open standards, open data, open, you know, exportable data files so that your backpack goes with you wherever the learning happens, not the other way around.
And that's where I see it being valuable in the educational system, because regardless of what school district you go to, it goes with you and it's not stuck in that school district.
Well, and as a lifelong resume, that's where it's all, that's the big deep geek stuff that I want to talk about someday. But like, you want to say that this kindergartner today, 15 years from now, when they're a 23-year-old or whatever, they can also take everything they've learned and they're starting to learn as a workforce member with them, no matter where they live, and keep adding to that digital backpack.
Yeah.
Have you done any work with the Mastery Consortium Transcript?
You know, I actually, we do not do work with them, but I'm familiar with the program, and I think that we share a short-term vision in terms of, you know, recognizing learning more holistically and moving away from those like grade level proxies and moving more towards like a skills basis. The one divergence in that group, which has more leeway because it's a network of private schools, I believe. So they have a little bit more leeway to say, you know, what an educated individual has possessed over their whatever 4 or more years of education. I like to think that like folks like Badger and even Credential Engine is a really great nonprofit in the space. They're taking a more broad view and saying, okay, not only what matters in K-12 is important, but what about beyond that? And are we awarding badges that are exportable, that are portable, that can connect with the other learning experiences that someone might have outside of the learning environment and beyond the learning environment? So I think that consortium has the right idea, but I really wish they would adopt open badges so that we can start to create a more broad, I guess, portfolio, right? Or you use the word resume, right? Like a more rich resume of interconnected skills and competencies. And Ryan, I want to tease something a little bit because I really appreciate your enthusiasm. And I'm trying to keep this conversation sort of at that first level. Right. But there is a huge move, including from folks like the Chamber of Commerce Foundation, the T3 Innovation Network. There are national priorities to
that's that interoperable learner record white paper, right? Yeah, or project, I guess you could say, is what it's turned into.
Right. And Badger Concentric Sky is a major contributor to that work. And yeah, we like literally wrote the book on digital badges. It's funny. Some of our competitors use our APIs. Like it's because we're so dedicated to open standards. We believe that in order to reach an equitable and a more rich picture of learning, that you don't just build the pipes and then charge for access. You build the pipes and you prove yourself by creating features that build on that in a really powerful and meaningful way. But anybody can use that infrastructure, which is why the open badges specification is so powerful.
Sure. It's like another one of Ryan's passions. The oh my gosh, it's escaping me, Ryan. What is it? The computer software.
Oh, just general open source, but Linux is what you like.
Yes, open source versus closed source. You are working in the badging area of open source badging, so you are more like the Linux versus those other companies. Maybe fall more in line with Microsoft and
Apple.
Yeah, although we do support an integration with Microsoft Teams. And
we do.
I saw that. I actually found that and asked our district tech group, like, hey, what do you know about this? I saw like there's a GitHub thread within Microsoft or something. And they're like, we're working on it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's still early. Yeah. Yeah, it's still early. And there's always cool stuff happening. Like we just launched a Zapier integration. So for folks who are like hashtag no code, right? They're not developers or software engineers. There's some really cool things you can do between platforms with Badger using Zapier. So again,
spell that?
Oh, Zapier. It's a great tool, by the way. I highly recommend it for educators.
That was actually a question I was going to save for later, but since you brought it up, I am curious. I'm a teacher. We have this question later. I'm a teacher. I want to just try some badging with my kids, my class. Is Zapier the way to go, or what could I do to kind of, you know, dip my toes into this?
Yeah, I really relate with that teacher. You know, I'm kind of a techie oriented guy. I've find like great pleasure in figuring out how stuff works and all that. But sometimes I do I call it the my mom and I test. So my mom is 65 years old. She's been a teacher for 30 years. She teaches French in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And whenever I'm thinking about how I communicate the value of technology, I'm always thinking about that dichotomy. So like, how would I communicate with someone like me versus how would I communicate this for someone like my mom? So either way, I think the best way to get involved, honestly, is to create a free account on Badger. Just go to badger.com, create an account. I think we might be the only digital badge provider Don't quote me on that. But you can create an account for free. You can create as many badges as you want for free. You can start creating issuers for free. You can start sharing those for free. Part of the reason why we made that available and it will be free forever is because we want folks to experiment, to sandbox with their ideas. We know that, especially when you're a teacher, getting a budget is like a pipe dream, right? So on that weekend or on that evening, it can take you, I don't know, an hour, a half an hour, just create a couple badges, think about what you might want to recognize your students for, and just start doing it. And if you have questions, part of my job at Badger, so I'm the digital credentialing evangelist, but in many ways I act like the director of marketing because I'm always thinking about not only, you know, getting folks excited, but once they're excited, then what? What do they do? So we have, I highly recommend, we have a resource on Badger.com, and it was written by John Kelly, who is an instructor, K-12 educator of the year. And he walked
Him up. I saw he was your first guest on your podcast. I want to listen to that episode, and I think we need to get him on. So tell us about him.
Yeah, no, he's, I really adore that guy. I met him through the work that we do with Instructure, with Canvas, the learning management system. And you know, he and I are on the same level. He started a free Badger account and he put an entire pathway together for his students for his sixth grade science class, which also appeals to me because my first teaching role was as a sixth grade teacher. They actually had me teach everything but science, which was hilarious because I was doing the alternate route program and I had just literally walked out of a laboratory and they're like, you should teach these kids, but like not science, all the other things. And yeah. I was like, oh, okay, I'll try to teach these kids about Mesopotamia, but really I just want to talk about, you know, phylogenetic trees. But yeah, we have those resources on there. And we also have in our pathway gallery, exactly what that pathway looks like. And in that resource article, we have like mastery-based replacing grades. So Eric, to your credit, replacing some of those grades with digital badges and like what that looks like. And it's a really great success story. So I encourage folks to check that out if they want to get started.
Do you ever see a future where secondary education could adopt a system like this? And for those kids, because we've talked about this a lot in our past episodes as well, college is really expensive, you know, and to be honest with you, if you go get some books and go do some researches on different majors you can get in college, a lot of them are fairly meaningless. And colleges are making a lot of money off of people that feel that they have to go to college because, you know, all those articles they read that the college graduate makes X amount of dollars and the high school graduate only makes X amount of dollars. But here's the deal. I would imagine that most people that get hired, even out of college, go through a significant training program. Do you see a future where these online portfolios, these resume-rich documents with these three-dimensional badges, can a student can just leave their senior year in high school and go straight into the workforce?
Yes. Yes. I definitely see that future. And I share your enthusiasm for exactly, you know, when that future is going to get here. I guess just to start my answer to that question, there are projects that I actually have mentioned, but they're being spearheaded by the Chamber of Commerce Foundation, the T3 Innovation Network, the Council for the American Worker, the Open Skills Network. A lot of these organizations, and they're generally collaborations between workforce, higher education, there's some government folks in there to make the policy ball roll when it needs to roll. And they're exactly working towards that feature, because you're exactly right. I think that college is a great option for some people. Another fun fact about me, I actually wasn't planning on going to college when I was in high school. I wanted to join the Navy so I could go to medical school and I could, because I could never afford it. I was like, I grew up deeply in poverty. So I never considered college. I was planning on going into the military, but you know, the war in Iraq kind of changed my plans. I had a few buddies come home with injuries and I decided, you know what, maybe I'll give college a try. And I mean, that's a big risk. It's a very expensive. I'm still paying it off. I'm 34 years old. I'm still paying off my college loans.
I'm still paying it off. I got about 12 years.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And here it is. It's learning versus certification. So I wanted to get out of college and I wanted to walk into a laboratory. there's no way I was going to do that without a college degree. So it was like pay to play, right? I had to get that piece of paper. But along the way, I had really valuable learning experiences that contributed directly to that next step and indirectly to the steps that I would take after. So when, Eric, you mentioned this picture of learning as a more holistic, more like a global tool, whether it's a portfolio or a profile or something like that, these organizations are working towards that. And there are tools that are being adopted more and more to recognize that kind of learning. But, you know, it just, it takes time. And, you know, these are well-worn institutions and processes. So in the meantime, there are definitely some folks who are sort of leading the way. And I feel like Badger is one of those organizations that kind of not only gives you the tools, but like surfaces those success stories so that you don't feel like you're alone. You can not reinvent the wheel. But yeah, I look forward to seeing a lot more of that because I was one of those kids. And, you know, as a teacher, I actually taught in a CTE school. So 90% of my students when I was a high school teacher, they were actually going to go and become nurses. I did the pre-nursing certification course, the allied health coursework for CTE teachers. So, you know, I really appreciate that perspective. It's part of the reason why I got into this space. And I think folks who share, you know, this sentiment are going to be attracted to this space, like Ryan, who's going real deep and, you know, figuring out how he can mobilize not only what he's doing, but like communicate that broadly to his community. And it does take a community. A lot of this is ground up. It's not just top down. Sometimes they call this the treetops versus the grassroots approach. And I like to say it's both. It's got to come from both directions. So you got to get buy-in from that superintendent, but those teachers also need to have the tools they need to make it happen. It can't just be dropped on them as another thing. Right. That's not fair either. So finding that sweet spot is a community endeavor for sure.
I fully expect Ryan to be handing out badges next week.
Well, you might be right.
Do it. Go to badger.com, create a free account.
It's really actually, easy. Since I have you here, I've been on here before as an issuer. I just didn't fully understand all of it. When it says website URL, is that, what does that need to be? Like, I don't have a website to attach to the badge necessarily, but it's a required field.
Ooh, I love that. That's like such an in the weeds question. So when you go to create a badge, so there's a button that says create badge. So you create an issuer. And then once you have an issuer, well, every badge needs to be issued by somebody. So that's why the issuer exists. And under your issuer, you can have as many badges as you want. So when it comes to that required field, because there's required and then there's non-required fields. So a website URL is an example of a required field. And the reason why that's there is to give folks who that badge is shared with an idea of where they can go to get more information about that badge or that issuer or that program. So if you were issuing badges through the lens of, you know, you, Ryan, as an educator, then I would say to link your it depends. So you could link the school district if it's a school program, or you could link your classroom website if this is something that you're doing sort of
I do outside. Have a classroom website set up for this kind of thing. So that's a good point. And hopefully that helps all these teachers that want to get started too, like to where, because I'm guessing most teachers need to start at this very local level, kind of like John Kelly did, or is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, just start. I want to do this in my classroom. How do I do this really locally and at a micro level? So thank you. That's helpful.
Yeah. And a lot of modeling can be done by innovative teachers. So a lot of times a teacher might just figure something out. They go to their coach and they say, how can we get buy-in for a program like this? And then the coach sort of brings it up the chain that way. Sometimes it's the other way. It's the superintendent. You know, they have their own initiative. But I think that's a great way for educators to get started with digital badging. And, you know, there's one thing I wanted to leave you guys with that I cover in my monthly webinar is the what, how, and why of digital badges. So Ryan, there are required and non-required fields. And when I convince an educator to start doing something like this, or if they're already thinking about doing about this, a model that I use is, what are you badging? That's the competency. How do you know that someone's demonstrated that competency? That's the criteria. And the why is it important? That's the alignment. Or that's an elaboration further in the criterion. If you can answer those three questions, it's a badge.
Excellent. That's helpful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, right on.
All right. Well, I know we're getting really long because this is exciting, but I am, you mentioned.
Go ahead, Ryan, with the resource question.
Oh, I was going to even ask the parent question.
No, I'll skip that one.
Okay, let's do it. All right. So if our listeners want to learn more, you've mentioned the Badger website, and that's, by the way, everybody, badgr.com. The Badger website, what other resources could they go to if they want to learn more about digital credentialing? Or books, I don't know, podcasts, Twitter feeds, whatever.
Yeah, right on. So yeah, I've plugged the website, so I'm just going to reiterate that. Go to the website. There's success stories and resources and all kinds of good stuff there. But honestly, I would take a step back. I really think if you're an educator who's really serious about differentiation and granular recognition and really getting to the heart of why all of these different moving parts are so valuable, I'm going to reiterate that book by Todd Rose, End of Average. I think it's one of the best books I've read in a long time. I read constantly. My fiance is a librarian. So I'm reading constantly. I'm a relatively fastidious learner, but that book is just so good. And I don't want to spoil too much, but when you get to the end of the book, his culminating point is basically digital badges. Like, we need them. And it's funny because, you know, he arrived at that conclusion before I think he understood that there was this huge groundswell of folks with that same idea. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't had the opportunity to interview him, but he's gone on to do work with folks like Digital Promise, which is a great resource for educators. They're a nonprofit organization and they have a lot of tools. They have a learner variability project. They have an educator micro-credentialing initiative, and everything that they built is on top of Badger. So it just goes, again, to show the flexibility of those open standards and all the different ways that that can manifest. Obviously, Badger also has Twitter and LinkedIn, and we have a podcast of our own. So if you want to look up micro-credentialism, I think there's 10 interviews that I've done with different folks who have used digital badges in like interesting, innovative, and important ways. So if you want to listen to that podcast, it's available anywhere podcasts are available. And yeah, thanks for that question.
Speaking of Todd Rose's culminating point, we're going to wrap up here. And instead of Ryan and I having a debriefing session after we let you go, I'm just going to ask you to kind of, if you could just think about everything that we've talked about, what is the single most important thing that you'd like our listeners to take away from today's conversation? And trust me, it's been a lot. But can you narrow that down to like a main point?
Yeah, we've really covered a lot of ground here. I feel like we've set up for an obvious sequel. But I guess, you know, I'm going to start with the same idea I had 7 years ago when I first made this shift from the classroom to I moved over to California to do the work that I did with that nonprofit. I literally drove across the country in my pickup truck with all my stuff in the back. And then when I got to San Francisco, all of my things in the back of my truck were promptly stolen. So I basically started fresh in more ways than one, not just professionally. I had 3 telescopes in the back of my truck. So whoever stole my things is going to be well equipped for astronomy. But, you know, I'm going to capture this in one sentence. It doesn't matter how long it takes you to learn something, and it doesn't matter how you learn something. All that matters is that you're recognized for the learning that you do in the context that it occurs.
Wow. You just gave me goosebumps there. That was so powerful. And again, you just talked about how we need a sequel. I just off of what you said, I have a whole other line of questioning that just popped in my head, but that'll be for another time. Robert, we thank you so much for coming on our show. And I hope that our listeners got as much out of this as I know that Ryan and I did, because this is a very valuable conversation. And I thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you guys for having me. It's a real pleasure.
That was a great episode. If you are interested in learning more about open badges, maybe you want to start small with your classroom, or maybe do a badge for your teachers that you're building, depending on your level of leadership, definitely check out openbadges.org. Also reach out to Robert Bajer on Twitter, as he said, and just get started. The best place to start is just making your first badge. You can even make it a clip art if you want to. It doesn't even have to be an official Open Badges badge, but just explore that idea, attach some valuable data to that badge, and just get going with it. And let us know on Twitter at The Peg Doesn't Fit how it's been going for you and what have been your successes with badges, or maybe some of the most difficult pieces with doing badges at your school. Thank you. See you then. See you next time, actually. We're going to meet with Chad Dumas, author of Let's Put the C in PLC, A Practical Guide for School Leaders. See you then.